guys.
You're listening to Mama Knows Podcast with your host, Nina Cavagiola, a.k.a. Balconina. Join in weekly as she walks alongside you to navigate topics around motherhood, mental health, self-love, and relationships. The good, bad, and funny.
Raise your hand if you have ever been on a diet. I'm raising both my hands because I'm like a chronic dieter. I haven't dieted in a long time, but I'm also in this like weird spot where I feel like I can't diet because like people are toxic about diets. But then I'm also like in this spot where I don't want to diet because I know I'll get obsessed and I know it doesn't work. And I don't know, like I want to lose weight. I want to feel good, but I also like don't want to admit that to many people. Anyways, I did admit it today to Lisa. She is a registered dietitian and she has her own practice. She works with people on dieting and eating tips and etc. She's incredible. I'm so excited for you to hear this episode. I feel like it really helped me a lot. So let's jump in. Lisa, thank you so much for being here today. I would love for you to tell my listeners about yourself and maybe share a little diet struggle you faced in your life. Because yes, you're an expert, but I also, you know, you're human, right? So I would love to hear about that.
100%. I'm so happy you've been asking me that because I do think a lot of people assume that because we're dietitians or I'm a dietitian that I have this perfect diet, perfect relationship with food. I never eat food like candy or fried food or fast food. And it's totally false. And it's a total misconception that these foods can't be part of a healthy diet.
Yeah.
So I definitely have had my fair share of struggles throughout my life. It's one of the reasons that I did get into the industry. And I think like most people, when they choose a career for themselves, they are choosing something that they feel connected to, something that they have a history with, because then that makes them more passionate and compassionate when they're helping other people figure it out as well. So I definitely didn't always have the best body image. You know, I don't even know what having a great body image all of the time, if that's even possible, but I've definitely had my struggles there. I was very active. I played a lot of sports as a kid and I was always like the small girl and the thin girl. And I always got compliments about that because that's how it was portrayed as compliments. Mm-hmm. Not that it needed to be, but it was. And as soon as I stopped playing sports and running around every day after school, I noticed immediately my body started to change. And I noticed that things were a little tighter and softer and not as easy to get dressed and pick out outfits or wear like what we used to wear, like belly shirts and have our stomachs hanging out. Mm-hmm. So all of those things got instantly more difficult and noticeable for me because I never really had to worry about that as such an active teenager. And so for me, that's when a lot of it started. And it was almost like an identity crisis when you're looked at one way and people constantly refer to you in one way. And then that changes, especially with your physical appearance, that could be very, very hard. Some people will have larger bodies most of their life and lose a lot of weight. And all of a sudden they can't, you know, and then they're getting all these compliments about weight loss and they can't necessarily accept them, or they still look in the mirror and they see this larger person and it's hard for them to accept that they're in smaller bodies. So, you know, it could work in reverse too. You could always be this, you know, naturally smaller person and then gain weight and then have trouble accepting that as well. So it is unfortunate that we can attach so much of our self-worth and identity to our weight. And I do try to help people overcome that, at least work through that, so they're not constantly thinking that their weight defines their worth. Mm. But, you know, it's just something that is real, you know, that's people struggle with all of the time. Even if people who are big body positive advocates struggle as well. I don't think anyone has, like I said, the perfect body image. So that really started my interest more in the nutrition industry. And I always loved science. It was my favorite class. History, forget about it. Like it's just not my strong suit. I admit it. It's just not for me. But science and math, I always felt were more interesting and I was always more of a natural with. So combining that with my love for being creative, and food is the one thing that brings people together. You know, it really is. Like, we all need to eat. At the end of the day, we all need food. Everybody needs food to live. We need food every single day for the rest of our life, which is what I remind my clients who try to restrict too much and try not to eat all day. So it was something that I felt like it almost found me. You know, I really say it really was something that I feel like it chose me, and it just seemed like such a natural fit. So that's kind of how I got into the industry. It was partially my own personal struggles, my own personal interest. It's no secret. A lot of dietitians do get into the industry and have had eating disorders in the past and have had their own struggles. And that's what leads them into the industry. And I think as long as that person is fully recovered and practicing what they preach and, you know, doing everything that they know is right and that they tell for their clients, then I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I think people that have had more struggles in their life can become better, more compassionate, more effective healthcare providers. Mm-hmm. So although I never had an eating disorder myself, I definitely struggled with navigating food, listening to my body, trusting my body, mm-hmm. trusting food, trusting I can go out and order what I want and I won't have to worry about it the next day and I won't feel bad and bloated and sluggish. And, you know, so there, that's always a balancing act of trying to, you know, figure answer, give yourself foods that you want, but also understanding foods that your body needs that are nutritious and nourishing as well.
Yeah. I'm going to save that question for last, but I definitely want to hear how you get to that point and, or how to help my listeners get to that point. So, but first I want to talk, you have a book called The Core Three Eating Healthy Plan. And you talk about the four eating archetypes in there.
Yes.
Are you willing to share a little bit more about those and what they are? And I actually never even really heard about them before, but they make sense to me. So
definitely. Yeah. So in writing this book, my first objective was really to bridge that gap between people who want to lose weight, but also people that struggle with their relationship with food. So it's supposed to help people who want to just find something that's more sustainable and personalized. So there is an actual personalized plan within the book, in the middle of the book, the second part. But the first part goes into relationship with food and relationship with your body, because I believe those are really the most important pillars of any healthy eating plan. And they're often the most overlooked. When you go on a diet plan, they're really talking about hunger and fullness and mindless eating and stress eating and all or nothing eating, which is what so many people struggle with, that all or nothing mentality. So my purpose in that was really to start the book off addressing the biggest issues that people face when it comes to finding their healthiest, happiest weight. And that's relationship with food. So to make it more relatable and for people to really find it more digestible, I broke that chapter down into what I have observed in my 12 plus years in counseling and private practice as being the biggest pitfalls and issues that I see when it comes to people and how they approach eating. So it's divided into these four archetypes, like you said. There's the erratic eater, the dependent eater, the judgmental eater, and the obsessive eater. And in each one of those, I outline the certain characteristics, what can make somebody more of an erratic eater or a judgmental eater, for example, what the common pitfalls are, why that can be problematic, and then the specific solutions to that and how you can overcome and transform that from something that can be quite dysfunctional and distorted to something that can be very functional and healthy. So I go into that in that chapter. The erratic eater is usually somebody who's not eating much all day. They're busy. When they're stressed, they don't eat a lot. They might only have like one sit down meal a day, and that's only with their family at night. And the rest of the day is grab and go and picking and all of these things. And for them, they might do a lot of mindless eating. So they could actually be eating more than they think they are. And for them, we'd want to work more on mindful eating practices and carving out time for meals and being more intentional. For the dependent eater, they might be somebody that really food is such a focal point when they plan trips and events and activities. It's everything is about the food, and they're always thinking about their next meal and thinking about dinner before they even finish breakfast. They might struggle more with emotional eating. So they might be using food a little bit more as comfort, which isn't a bad thing periodically, but for them, it might be more frequent and more common. And so for them, we'd want to work on feeding their emotional hunger, being more aware, identifying what's true biological hunger versus what's non-actual hunger and a hunger for something else. So that's something that I talk about more specifically for this group of people. Then we get into the judgmental eaters. So these are more of my like serial dieters. They've been on so many diets and they've picked up on all of these different ideas. And they think it's a lot of binary thinking. Like this is good. This is bad. These are off limits. These are allowed to eat. These are fattening. These are healthy. These are unhealthy. Like there's nothing in between. It's either good and bad. They could do a lot of policing. They can be policing other people around them. Oh my God, I can't believe you're eating that. So many calories. Oh my God, I can't believe I ate that. It was so many carbs. Like there's a lot of that, of those judgments. And the worst part is they're judging themselves more than they're judging anybody else. So for those people, we have to work on those food rules that they have. We have to debunk them. We have to work on giving them more permission because they can deal with a lot of out of control eating. They're the ones that often when they get their hands on these foods, which is inevitable when they're eating out or holidays or vacations, they're feeling like they're overeating very often. And then the final group is this obsessive eater group. And this was very important for me to include because when anybody is looking for or picking up a diet book or a weight loss book, and although I don't call this a diet book, it's a healthy eating plan, there is methods and tips in there to lose weight. So anyone that's picking that up, I always want to be careful because you know, the reality is people that struggle with eating disorders are going to often be the low-hanging fruit that are the ones that are reading this and it can be really damaging and it can be quite health hazardous for them to be reading any book with intentional weight loss mentioned at all. So it was important for me to include that so that I could draw attention to people that, you know, they need more intervention. They need help. They need to seek professional care that maybe before they even go through the other chapters of the book that they are able to maybe work on that a little bit more because anything else after that point could be actually unhealthy for them. It could be negative for them. So obsessive eaters are just constantly, I mean, the food thoughts are constant. And I think it was a behavioral psychologist that said the average person has about 260 food choices in a day. So that was the estimation that we think about food about 260 times throughout the day. Obviously, how does he really measure that? I don't know, but he's the expert. And so for people with eating disorders, it could be like double and triple that. So you could just imagine how much it consumes their life. So anything they read and hear and are told, it's like they're already thinking about it too much. This is only going to make it worse.
Yeah. Wow. I love that you just explained all of that. I had no idea. I mean, it makes so much sense too. Can you be like more than one?
100%.
Because I'm pretty sure I'm two of those.
100%. It is. And I do include that. And I always like to prep it all by saying like, you know, you're probably going to relate to more than one. And it, depending on where you are and throughout your life, you can kind of fluctuate between a few. And So absolutely. It's kind of was created with different types of clients in mind, but knowing that a lot of people do struggle with multiple.
Yeah. And in your book, you talk about how to overcome those, right?
Yes.
You give, I love that. I'm going to need to order that ASAP.
Yeah.
So let's talk about diets, kind of to piggyback off of that. Why do they not work?
So when it comes to diets, you know, what is it? The statistic says anywhere from like 80 to 90%, 95% of diets fail. And I like to say diets fail people instead, because I think when we say diets don't work and they fail, people often internalize that and they think that they're failing and that you did something wrong. And it's really not the case. Most diets are not designed for long-term success. They are designed for quick results because let's face it, that's what people want. They want that immediate, instant gratification. They want to do things and then step on the scale and see the reward of the scale moving down. So, but the reality is the reason that they're getting these quick results is because these plans are incredibly rigid. They're not personalized. They're very restrictive. They might be eliminating major food groups. They're not necessarily personalized. So it's like kind of like, let's cut out as many calories as we possibly can. And so that people can lose as much weight as they possibly can. But the reason that doesn't also work long-term, aside from what I mentioned, is that when we lose weight, our metabolism can also decline a bit. It can slow down a little bit. It's not always significant. It doesn't always happen where it's an issue for a lot of people, but many people will see that when they lose weight. At some point, that progress stalls, stops, plateaus, or even goes in reverse. All of a sudden, they stop losing weight and they gain it again. And the reason for that is because our metabolism can adapt to the lower calorie consumption and intake. And this is called adaptive thermogenesis. And I love to point out there's this little graph that is often circulated on social media. Some people might have seen it and some people not, where there's a picture of these pieces of firewood and a large fire on top of it. Like, you know, you're making a fire basically. And then next to it is like, maybe there was like 10 logs of wood in one pile. And then there's one next to it that has three. And because there's only three logs, the fire is much smaller. When you take away that wood, the fire starts to dwindle. And that's kind of how it is with our metabolism. When you feed your body less fuel, that burning mechanism becomes, you know, it starts to slow down. It starts to cut smaller. We're not burning as many calories. And partly it's because we don't need as many calories. Because when you weigh less, our bodies will burn less. If a 300 pound person is walking up a flight of stairs, it's going to be a lot more effort for them than someone who's 125 pounds walking up a flight of stairs. So that's kind of how it works. The less you weigh, the less you burn, and the less calories you consume, the less your body will need. It adapts to that. So that's why a lot of people start to see progress stall. That's why a lot of people stop completely because they get discouraged. And that's why a lot of people end up stopping the diet, thinking that it's not working. And then they kind of go back to where they started, and they'll like literally go to the opposite end, and they'll feel like all of a sudden all these foods that they were restricting, they are feeling the urge to eat them in large quantities, and it becomes out of control because they told themselves that it's bad. This food is bad. Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to eat this. I wasn't supposed to eat that donut. It wasn't allowed on my diet, but I ate it anyway. So I might as well keep going, and I'll just eat the whole box of donuts. And now I did something really bad. So now I'm a bad person and might as well do more bad things. Like these are the cycles that people go through that I see so often. So there's a lot of different things and reasons why, but those are probably the biggest.
Yeah. I never thought about it like that. Like the metabolism slowing down, you know, that I never thought about it like that. Yeah. And the diet.
There's ways to combat that too, though. Yeah.
Yeah. And the diet, like the diet marketing doesn't really tell you that, right? They just want you to get the fast results.
They do. I know. I wish there was more disclaimers and I wish there was more transparency, but the diet, most diets are created and, you know, as part of the diet industry. The mm-hmm. diet industry is an industry that's looking to sell, you know, and they're convincing people that you can change your body because they want people to buy their diets and look, buy into their ideas because it's about that bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. So nowadays you see a lot of like body positivity, body this and that, like no diets. I love myself for how I look and blah, blah, blah. But like, I'm going to just be the devil's advocate and say, yeah, I would love to think like that every day. But no, I literally just the other day was like, I want to lose weight. I don't love how I feel. My clothes are fitting tighter, da, 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 da. And for me personally, it's not necessarily like I need to weigh a certain amount or I need to fit in a certain number clothing. For me, it's more like I don't want to weigh more and I don't want to have to buy new clothes. It's more like I just want to feel good and look good for me, for my own eyes, because I feel good. So how the heck does somebody who doesn't have the means right now to necessarily hire a trainer or a nutritionist or whatever, how does somebody lose weight, lean out, gain muscle? I know that's kind of loaded, without obsessing over a diet. I know that's a very big question, but I want you to really tell my listeners, because a lot of us are moms who just want to feel good, right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. And I do always say too, look, I love the body positive movement. I think it's doing so many good things for so many people. And it's getting people that really have tried everything or just realize that diets don't work for them. It's not healthy for them. It's helping them to learn how to accept their body a little bit better and even be proud of it and confident. And I think that's amazing. But the reality is that there's still a lot of people that feel like I gained weight from pregnancy. I gained weight as a mom. I know that it's not because I'm listening to my body. I know that I, you know, haven't been making time for myself, sitting down to meals. I'm eating off of my kids' plate. For some reason, we can't like throw out their food. We have to instead throw it out into our bodies. Like we can't just go and bring it to the garbage can. And I understand that too. Food waste, food bills are crazy right now. So I understand that as well. But there's a lot of people like that. And they're just like, look, I get it, you know, and even listening to their body, the intuitive eating concept of, you know, that can also be like a privilege. Not everybody can listen to their body when you're busy and stressed and you have kids crying and screaming and your husband needs to do this or your wife needs to do that, or you have a job and a boss and all of these demands in life. Or medical conditions can also be a reason why people cannot listen to their body, like really significant severe GI issues and autoimmune conditions, and they're taking medications that mess up with their hunger and fullness cues. So the list goes on. So my point is that all of those concepts, while I think are amazing and I incorporate them a lot, and I think they can kind of neutralize a lot of the damages that the diet industry does, it's still okay to want to lose weight. It's still okay to want to go on a diet. You're not a bad person. It's totally understandable. You're not happy in your weight. You want to be smaller. You want to be thinner. You want to be skinnier. You want to weigh less. That is totally your right. And I don't think we should make anyone feel bad about that. Just like we don't want to make anyone feel bad about being in a larger body. So stop with the shaming. You know, I see it from both ends. Mm-hmm. For those people, I would always start with it's a plan, because I really believe plans can be so helpful as a reference and a roadmap and a guide. It could teach people about estimated nutritional needs. It could give people ideas. It could teach them how to balance their plate. Like, what should I actually be putting in my plate? What should I be getting at the grocery store and cooking every night? A lot of people are so confused more than ever and overwhelmed because there's so much diet noise out there and everyone has their own philosophy. You should be eating gluten-free. You should be eating carb-free. You should be doing intermittent fasting. And all of those are fine and might work for certain people, but you probably don't need to do those extremes. Like, those are built for extreme results so that people get hooked and then they keep coming back and then they get used to those extreme results. So they're built for people to like almost be reliant on them and keep going back to them, versus a real solid, sustainable plan is not going to necessarily give you those instantaneous results, which is for a lot of people very difficult, but it can help you figure out really what your healthiest weight is. So I would say coming up with a plan based on your needs. In the Core 3 Healthy Eating Plan, I actually do give people a formula to figure out how many servings of carbs, proteins, and fats every day that they should carve out or they should plan for, because everybody's needs are so different. It's also okay to incorporate calories. I don't think calorie counting is inherently bad. I think it can become a slippery slope if you are so fixated on numbers that you stop listening to your body. But calorie counting for a lot of people works amazing. They can log in an app like Lose It or Chronometer or MyFitnessPal, and they can, you know, just give real-time feedback when you're doing an app like that. It can be tedious and I don't recommend it long-term, but short-term, it can be really helpful to get someone on the right track and path. So those are a few things to start with. I, of course, not to, you know, self-promote, but just my profession is the expert in nutrition and weight loss and dieting. So meeting with a registered dietitian, my practice takes health insurance. A lot of dietitians do take health insurance. It doesn't have to be this luxury thing. It's not like having a private chef. Nutrition should be accessible for everybody, and it can be accessible for everybody. So having that one-on-one personalized approach could be very helpful. And then looking at other things. So then we want to maybe get into functional medicine and looking at doing some wellness tests and looking at micronutrient panels. And maybe, you know, if you're noticing some GI issues, we know that gut health can be closely tied to metabolic health. So maybe looking at your gut health and seeing if there's anything going on there. Hormonally, looking at your thyroid, but not just your TSH, but your T3 and your free T3 and free T4. Looking at maybe fasting insulin, seeing if maybe there's a little bit of insulin resistance. Because although having children especially doesn't mean like your body has to change and there's no hope and that's it. And like, you're a mom now, so you have to stop caring what you look like. Like, I don't think any mom really feels that way. But our bodies can change a little bit. It can, going through pregnancy, especially if you've had more than one. it does change us a little bit. And then also we're getting older. So it's like, you know, it's not always pregnancy. It's just that, look, you're in your 40s now and you were in your 30s before, 20s before you had kids. That's probably what the real issue is. It's not that you had kids. So mm-hmm. I think it's just all of these things together can really help to kind of fit the puzzle pieces together so that we can see the big picture of what we need to do. And so I would always say starting though with some kind of plan, figuring out meals for the week, figuring out dinners for the week. Cause let's face it, like dinners are always the hardest thing. So I'll say, okay, pick a different protein. Cause that's always the hardest. So pick a different protein. So maybe Monday you do chicken breast, Tuesday you do shrimp, Wednesday you do salmon, Thursday you make it a vegetarian plant-based meal. Friday you eat out, maybe Saturday you eat out, Sunday you do like a pasta sauce, something like that. So picking like one idea for every night and then rotating with the way you'll prep it, what vegetables you'll add to it, what starch. So maybe, you know, Monday could be like a air fried breaded chicken with roasted Brussels sprouts, or, you know, another day it could be like a chicken stir fry, and another day it could be like a chicken soup. And then Tuesday you could do a shrimp stir fry or shrimp kebab or, you know, so that is often really helpful for people because the end of the day is always the hardest. And that's mm-hmm. when a lot of us do most of our mindless eating, and, you know, moms especially, and yeah. I do this too myself. Sometimes it's like, we don't really eat until the kids are all done and put to bed. And then we're like, okay, now let me start eating. And then it's like the floodgates open and you can't close them.
Yeah. I love that you said that it is good and okay to have a plan, because yes. I'm in this mindset that having a plan is like dieting and I shouldn't do that. Whereas I'm the type of person that needs a plan. So I need to know like what's for my husband does dinners every night and he plans them out. And we just started that about 2 weeks ago that he actually plans them out, and it's working so well. Like we know what every week, approximately what we're going to have that night. And for me, also, I love to have a plan of when I'm going to snack, because I typically pay attention like when I'm hungry, and that's when my snack comes. So now I know that every day I'm probably going to be hungry around 10:30, 11 a.m. and I'm going to need a snack. So I love having a plan, but I also had this guilt associated with, well, I shouldn't, because that's like dieting. Because there is, like you said, there's toxic from both ends. There's toxic from people who are like body positive, don't diet. And then there's toxic from diet, diet, diet. So I was kind of stuck in the middle, and I really appreciate that you said it's okay to have a plan. It's okay to count your calories. It's okay to do these things. But when does it get out of hand? When is it like, okay, you're doing too much?
100%. So what I say for that, and I agree, and I think even with, like you mentioned, with timing, even though we can't plan hunger, we can figure out when we might be hungry. And again, sometimes we can't even identify hunger. So in that case, it is important to plan when to eat, because a lot of times we're not listening to our body and we need to be eating more often than we are. So ultimately, I would say that it's really just, you know, helpful to map that out, to know like what to expect for the week. I think it's having that something in between is really important. And for when does it get out of hand? It really depends. It really depends on the person. So what I will say to people, especially when meeting them one-on-one, is we'll start with this plan, like, which is like the training wheels until you can eat more freely. And while you have this plan in place, working on identifying hunger and fullness, working on flexibility, working on identifying if there's any stress eating or mindless eating. So it kind of happens naturally, because even with the most well-crafted plan, you're not going to follow it 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And the times that you're not following it is the opportunity to work on your relationship with food so that it doesn't become too extreme. So that plan doesn't disconnect you from your body even further. Because when you're so reliant on a plan to tell you what, when, and how to eat, you stop listening to your body to do that. Mm-hmm. And your body will always know best. Your body will know best. So I would say it's like almost having that plan and working on your relationship with food at the same time is your best bet and defense against it becoming disordered and dysfunctional. And then maybe developing more of like the judgmental eating types and the dependent and the erratic and the obsessive. So it's going to protect you from that. So checking in with yourself, asking yourself about hunger and fullness cues, even writing that down. I'll have a lot of patients, if they're doing food journals, and clients that they're doing food journals, writing down hunger levels and satisfaction levels. So even just making a note at the end of the meal, how satisfied was I with this meal, can do so many different, so many good things for you, because you're actually paying attention to it. And that's usually the hardest part, is when to stop eating. That's what people struggle with the most, is when do I stop? When do I put my fork down? I'm either eating because, you know, the plan told me how much to eat, or I stop eating because there's nothing on my plate, or I stop eating because everybody else around me stopped eating and now I feel self-conscious. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't just stop eating because we had enough. Like, I'm content. I'm good. Like, I know, mm-hmm, I can go and go back to my office, go back to work, or go to bed, and I don't need to eat anymore. That's always the hardest part about it.
Yeah, I love that. So in the beginning, you had mentioned that you also struggle with days where you're like negative diet minded, or you're not in a body neutral zone, or you're not in an intuitive eating zone. So my goals are body neutral and intuitive eating personally.
Yes.
And intuitive eating works. I just struggle like actually sticking with it sometimes. Kind of like you said, like I will go off and forget to pay attention. Am I full?
Yeah.
So on the days where you are feeling like, ugh, I hate how I look, I'm fat, my pants don't fit, like when you're having that negative self-talk and you're just like either binging or just having these negative thoughts about food, what are some tips, or what is your best advice for somebody on those days? Like, how do you get out of that rut?
It is really hard. And I'm happy you brought that up, because it is something that so many people I see struggling with my clients, and especially when they're trying to just eat healthier and working on their relationship with food and maybe becoming more intuitive eaters, is struggling to stay in that positive mindset. It's like the mindset and the mentality. So the self-talk, you know, can be rough. It can be rough. We could be our own biggest critics and we judge ourselves more than anyone else judges ourselves. So I always say starting just like identifying it and being aware that you're doing it is major. Some people don't even realize how much they get in their own way. So being able to recognize and identify that, I think that's always number one. Not trying to, and then not making yourself feel bad for feeling bad, which is also very common. I'll see people like, oh my God, like I ate this and I felt bad about it. Now I feel bad that I'm beating myself up. And I'm like, okay, well, where does this end? Like, you're just going to keep going and going. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you're making yourself feel worse. You don't need to. So meeting that with self-compassion, always having that compassion, I think is very, very important. And then one thing that can really help too, is just simply like adjusting the way you're looking at eating, and stop thinking in terms of what to avoid or what to subtract, or I don't feel good today, my clothes are tight, I need to get rid of this, this, and that because I don't feel good. And it took me like an extra 10 minutes to get dressed, and now I feel bad the rest of the day. So instead thinking about, well, what could I do for myself today? What could I add in? Maybe I'll go for a little walk at lunch to kind of like, maybe I'm a little extra bloated, or I'm just feeling like overwhelmed, because don't forget, body image is not what we see in the mirror. It's how we feel about what we see, and how we feel can be affected by so many different variables. Just having like a bad conversation with a boss or a friend or a family member, or, you know, struggling with other things, or just getting bad news alone can instantly transform the way that we look at ourselves and how we feel about ourselves. So we have to recognize that. But adding it, okay, maybe I need to add in more vegetables today. Maybe I haven't been drinking enough water. Maybe I need to get more lean protein in. So that, I think right there can really help to get you out of that like negative rut. And then the other thing is just giving yourself incentive to do things for yourself. So it might not be enough to do these to even lose weight, because sometimes that's a process. Like, you step on the scale and you don't want to just use the scale as your validation and your reassurance. You need to find other incentives and motivations to do these good things for yourself and take care of yourself. So one little tip that really has been working well for a lot of clients is to have some kind of jar or container where every time you do something for yourself that you know wasn't easy or was like a step in the right direction, you add a coin or marble or whatever you want to add into there, and make little benchmarks for yourself and check marks and checkpoints to kind of like add that up. And when you get to a certain place, give yourself a reward. Mm-hmm. Buy yourself something that you were thinking about getting that you didn't want to.
The reward chart.
The reward chart. It works so well. We do it with our kids. Like, we need it too. Like, we need that incentive to do things. It's just how we are as humans. So I would say a lot of those could be helpful. Journaling, talk therapy, and then just being compassionate and just saying like, look, I had a rough day. It was tough. You know, maybe you're getting your period. Maybe you just had like a week where you didn't sleep that well, and you're not going to feel good at the end of the week in either scenario. So having that self-compassion and say, okay, I'm just going through it. I don't like the way I look today. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to say, I feel fat. Like, there's nothing wrong with saying, I feel fat. We don't have to make this like taboo thing where you like can't talk about, like, it's okay to just say, I don't feel good. I feel ugly. Feel it. Just feel it all. Just live it, own it all, and say, I'm allowed to not feel good all the time. And that's why I personally prefer the body neutrality movement. Cause it's like focusing on what our bodies can do versus what our bodies look like, instead of saying like, I could feel great. I should feel great in this larger body, or no matter what body size I'm in, you're respecting what your body can do. I ran a marathon today. This body carried my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, how many children do you have? This body, you know, got me through medical school or law school, or this body is keeping me alive. I mean, we wouldn't be alive obviously without our body. So, those are some ways that you can work on that neutrality and that respect. And, and, you know, it doesn't mean having to love your body all of the time and having to look in the mirror and be like, I love the way I look. I don't even know if that's healthy to look in the mirror and always love the way you look all the time. I don't know if that's a healthy self-confidence either, but yeah.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that little tip. I hope that, you know, you said a lot of amazing things. I'm like over here thinking, oh my God, I can't wait to make a sound clip out of this because it's going to be so good. So, Lisa, can you share where we can find your book and where we can find you on social media and how we can get in touch with you?
Yes, absolutely. So you can find me on social. My handle is Lisa M Nutrition, pretty straightforward and boring, at Lisa M Nutrition. And my book, The Core 3 Healthy Eating Plan, is available on most book retailers. So Amazon, Barnes and Noble. You could also get it on my website directly, and I sign the copy for people when they do that. And my website is nynutritiongroup.com. So NY is in New York, nutritiongroup.com. And I do have a private practice as well. So if people are looking for more personalized one-on-one attention, we take health insurance, and we also offer virtual too.
Awesome. I love that. Thank you so much, Lisa, for your time today.
Thank you.
Lisa is actually giving us a 20% off of her book. I will link that below. You just have to use the code CORE20. How awesome. I'm so excited. I'm actually going to grab her book on Audible. I'm so excited to listen to it because I really do need tips on how to get out of that food judgment zone. I feel like when I eat a donut, I'm like judging myself for it. Anyone else do that? Ugh. Anyways, if this episode helped you in any way, I hope you feel less alone, especially. Please leave me a review, follow on socials, and let's chat next time.